If you brought a Bible with you, if you want to turn to the Gospel of John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, if you're unfamiliar with that, use your table of contents. Nothing wrong with that, but it's going to be in the second half of your Bible. The fourth book of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, will be in chapter 6, verses 1 through 15 today. We're in this series called Abundantly Beyond, and if you've been with us the last couple weeks, you know that this comes from Ephesians chapter 3, 20 and 21. We believe that God can do infinitely more and abundantly beyond than all we ask or imagine. And this has been kind of an anchor verse for us as we look back at 10 years of faithfulness. Here, the second Sunday in November, we will celebrate our church's 10-year anniversary birthday. And so we didn't want to just have a birthday party and have some cupcakes and say, you know, woo us, because that's not our goal here at all. On the opposite side of things, we want to point to all the things that God has done despite our best efforts at times to derail perhaps what he wants us to do and who he wants us to become. And so we're talking about this idea of what might God want to do above and beyond, abundantly beyond, infinitely beyond anything we can ask or imagine. And a couple weeks ago, I challenged you to think about that. Think about a situation in your life. Think about a person in your life who, if I said that person is going to come to church, that person is going to meet Jesus and have their life changed, you'd go, well, that's where you're stretching the bounds of my imagination, because that person is too unlikely. Can't we pick someone who's like already kind of a good, sweet person? Like a kind person who's giving and joyful and pleasant to be around? And can't we, but that person doesn't know Jesus yet. Can I focus on that person? Well, sure you can, but I really do believe, well, maybe it should just be both, right? That person and the person who's further. Because we believe God when he says that he can do infinitely more and abundantly beyond. But sometimes it's easy to dream about or desire this big blessing, and we want this. We've talked about not just looking back at the 10 years, as I referenced the timeline over here, which that's for everybody, by the way. If today's your first Sunday, would love to invite you after service, go up there, grab the sticker that says my first time at Fairview and initial it, sign it, whatever, and put it on there, way to the right. We're actually going to add to that banner here soon so we can create some more space. But if you've been baptized here, you can add that. And the dedications, if your child was dedicated, and just seeing the church grow, because the church timeline, our thankfulness is not about some events that have happened, but it's about God's hand through all of it. But as we look back, that's good, and we want also to look forward to think about life over the next 10 years. Personal lives, family lives, our church certainly. And it's easy to drift towards thinking about the big blessings, the breakthroughs, the miracles. Here in John chapter 6, what we're going to see is that we don't always have to look for the grand moment, the big reveal, the, you know, I had no money in my bank account and I was defaulting on my bills, and then I opened my my mail that day and I had Monopoly, the bank made an error in your favor and you have a bunch of money, and like cool, that would be fine. I think also illegal if you don't return that. I don't think Monopoly knows what they're doing on that. But we don't have to look just for this big moment, this huge thing. And as we're going to see today, is that sometimes the beyond that God has planned for our lives in fact begins with things that might seem beneath us, small, insignificant, ordinary things even. The beyond that God has planned may have more to do with the ordinary things in our hands than we may realize, because sometimes the miracle begins with the mundane. Each week we've been talking about abundantly beyond something, moving forward in our faith and life as a church, and today we are moving abundantly beyond. Abundantly, we've talked about convenience. We move beyond what is convenient. We move beyond these things. We want to move abundantly beyond scarcity. In this passage, which I bet many of you have heard before, Jesus miraculously feeds the 5,000. And that's a misleading title, because as a number of the Gospels note, that was the number of men that were in the group, and surely there were women and children there as well, so thousands, way above 5,000. And Jesus does a miracle that springs forth from something that was very mundane. Now, the context of this verse, or I should say this story, that Jesus and his disciples have been doing a lot of ministry. This passage, this story, Jesus feeding the 5,000, is mentioned, is referenced in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all mention it. Now that's unique. Aren't they all just carbon copies? No, the Gospels, although they especially Matthew, Mark, and Luke share a lot of similarities, there's also a lot of nuance and differences. It's not dissimilar, especially the first three, which are known as the Synoptic Gospels, as if we took three people in this room and asked you at the end of this message, can you just describe the message? What was it about today? And you'll probably all come up with, those three people might all give elements about the message that were true. Oh, it was about this verse, and this was the focus. But someone else might focus more on the intro, because that's all you remembered, and then you fell asleep. And someone else might focus on, well, he was wearing a white hoodie. And someone else may focus on the content. And all of them can be true, but there's nuance in the stories. But all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, mention this miracle. And that's significant because it's the only instance of this happening, the only miracle that's mentioned in all four Gospels, other than the resurrection of Jesus. And so there's special significance to this story. The disciples, we can read in Luke telling us about this story, the disciples had been with Jesus as he delivered people of evil spirits, he healed diseases, he had been teaching to large crowds, he even raised someone from the dead. In the midst of all that, a person very important to them, John the Baptist, had been beheaded, killed, martyred for his faith. And as life is swirling and people keep coming, Matthew says that there was no time even for them to eat. In Luke 9, verse 10, it says Jesus pulls them away to rest. And that's where this story picks up in John chapter 6. I'll read all through 15. Sometime after this, all this ministry, sometime after this, Jesus crossed the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had been performing by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one just to have a bite." Another of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here's a boy with five small barley loaves and two small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, he gave thanks, and he distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. And he did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and they filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the five barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, "Surely, this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. Significant miracle here, mentioned in all four Gospels. I mentioned the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and then we have John who kind of does his own thing. If you're curious about this, kind of some of the reasons for that is there may have been some source material that Matthew, Mark, and Luke used together that helped them kind of frame their story. And kind of an easy way to think about those three versus John is that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, essentially, if we boil it down, they focus a lot on what Jesus did, the actions and the teaching, whereas John shifts a little bit and his perspective is different and he focuses more on who Jesus is. And those together give us a really great picture. But again, having four different accounts of one story can be helpful to get different angles of one story. Also, it could be a little bit confusing. Some of you have asked me from time to time, how do I write my sermons? And I have developed different ways to do that over the years. Mine are mostly, I used to manuscript everything. Every word, every comma, every and but and pause was all written out. Because you're a terrifying bunch of people to stand in front of, and I never wanted to make a mistake. And I still made plenty of those, and I felt kind of shackled, and over time I grew in confidence. But what I do now is I take a lot of notes, I write things out, and I want to show you a little bit, not just for my process. If you can read, you're not going to be able to read any of that, don't worry, but I want to give you an idea of what goes on in my mind. It's chaos when I'm writing sermons. But what you have here on the top is Matthew 14. The second is Mark 6, and these are just the first two accounts. And what I want to show you here is all the things that are in color. Again, you're not going to be able to read it. Even if we made it bigger, you couldn't, because as the staff can attest, my writing is 100% illegible to anyone but me. But what I did is I went through and I highlighted in the same colors where the same ideas come up. And so you can actually, if you look at the top and then the bottom, you can kind of see almost everything. The pink appears in both. Then we have green. Then there's, what is that, salmon or something. And then we have a light yellow. We have an aqua blue that appears in both. Another different green that appears in both. What's that bottom one? You want to call that something fun other than purple? Indigo? Indigo's good. That's indigo. That'll be indigo for this service. And then the one on the left, what's that? Pink periwinkle, maybe? I don't know. Is that good? Okay. You can see a lot of similarities, right? Okay, now the next slide I'm going to show you is going to be Luke and now John. Now, Luke is going to follow the exact same order. Almost all of the major points are there, but then put your attention on that bottom one, John. Everything there that I've highlighted in yellow only is made mention of by John. That's it. Tells the story from a completely different perspective. Everything on there is unique to John. And if you, I would encourage you to do this. Maybe this week, today, go read all four of these accounts. And you'll see a lot of the differences. You'll see a lot of similarities in the synoptics and a lot of differences. Well, I wanted to focus on these unique things from the Gospel of John today to see what it might say for us in practical consideration. We all live in a real world. We need practicality. We can't just have ideas that are up in the clouds. Jesus begins in verse 5 by coming up with a problem. Now, I would say problem in quotes because he knows it's not a problem. We read immediately that although he brings this problem to the disciples, he already had the solution. I've seen a couple reels on social media where parents of young children, not like babies and toddlers, that would not go well, but a little bit older, maybe 8 years old, 7 to 10, somewhere in there. When they go to the airport, have you seen this? They go to the airport to go on a trip. They get them inside, and when they walk in the gates, the parents go, all right, navigate to see what their kids can do. And you think about your kids right now. Are you getting on that plane? You might not make it past the doors right there. Like, you're done. But the idea, I think, is fascinating. You know where to go. You know where the ticket counter is. You know if you have to check luggage, and if you do, how and how much it can weigh. You know that your goal is to go find your gate, make visual contact that it exists, and then go somewhere else and go eat, and then come back and fight for a seat, and then get on the plane. You know all of that. But to let someone's kids do that is simply saying, I'm curious what you'll do. We've started doing this from time to time in our family, going to the grocery store, or we did it at an airport to a degree, and just let the kids go. You guys figure it out. Now, if you need help, problem solve. What should you do if you need help? Well, ask. Don't ask us. Ask someone who works here. Ask this or that. Jesus is doing something a little bit similar where he's saying, hey, I know the problem. I already know the solution, but disciples, here's your opportunity. And what I love is that all these people are coming. He goes, where should we, how are we going to buy them bread? What are we going to do with these people who are hungry? To Jesus, feeding these people is not a question of if or should. he immediately moves to a place of assuming responsibility for these people. Now, how many of you are like the disciples who are take the exact opposite? You say, hey, these people are hungry. Jesus, can you kick them out so we can be done for the day? I'm already over on my hours this week. I'm ready to sit down. We were supposed to sit down and they crashed us and none of them brought enough food. Jesus, would you kick them out of here so we can take a nap? That's the human response. Remember all the ministry they've been doing. Jesus doesn't begin there. He doesn't, well, if we should feed them or should we feed them. He jumps to a place of assuming responsibility for them. We read in the Gospel of Mark in this moment, it says he had compassion on these people because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And that's the kind of heart we want to develop in our own lives. Now, something else unique, thinking about these other disciples and their typical response, send the people away, Jesus, get them out of here. Only in John do we get people's names. I think it's significant. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, every one of them calls them the disciples, or the 12, but then refers right back to the disciples. But in John, we get some names, which is unique. So let's look at these different names. In verse 7, if you want to look again at verse 7, I have a man named Philip. And in verse 7, after Jesus says, where are we gonna buy bread for these people? Not how or should, where? Where are we going to get bread for possibly 12,000 people? So here's the question, guys. Hey, Kendallville is really hungry today. Where are we getting bread for Kendallville? Where? Albright's? I don't know. Better call ahead. Verse 7, here's his reply. And a lot of us would go right here. Philip answered him, it would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each person to have a bite. That's logical, right? That makes sense probably to a lot of us. For Philip, and we're going to tie this back to this idea of what can God do beyond. For Philip, even thinking about beyond was impossible. He doesn't even try to believe. It's too expensive. We can't do it. He decides everything with a calculator. Here's the problem. We got to get the people some food. And he just goes, yeah, there's no money. Hard no. Next. Some of us are like this. If you have an idea, you immediately, your mind is logical and rational, and you like to have a solid plan before you commit to anything. And parts of this are noble and good, but it can also limit our understanding of what God might want to do beyond the limits that we're placing on him. And Philip says, yeah, it's impossible. Let's kick these people out of here. Again, Jesus, tired, nap, come on, do it. We go on. In verses 8 and 9, we're introduced to Andrew. For Andrew, in verse 8 and 9, his response is this. Another of the disciples, Andrew, spoke up. Well, here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many? Where Philip saw the beyond as something that was impossible. Here, Andrew seems to approach seeing the beyond as something not impossible, but improbable, unlikely. He gives a little bit of hope, right? And maybe it's cynical, or maybe he's joking. We don't get like parentheses, JK, parentheses, laughing, crying emoji. We don't get that. We just get he said it, and we have to kind of move on with that. But to me, it feels hopeful. Well, at least we have something, but Jesus, there's 5,000 men here and their families with them. How could these even go? He shows signs of belief, but then he waffles back to reality. He says, maybe we could, but probably not. And while ultimately he lands at the same place as Philip, I think it's admirable that he at least begin to flirt with the idea that maybe something could happen, even if ultimately he falls back. Now, these names we have Philip, we have Andrew. These are big names. You can read about them in the rest of the Gospels. But then we meet somebody that doesn't get a name. It's simply called the boy. In verse 9, the second half of the verse we just read, in Andrew's answer, he says, well, here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. For Philip, the idea of going beyond experiencing that would be impossible. For Andrew, it was improbable. But here we have a boy for whom the idea of beyond at least begins with what's available. We don't know much about this kid. He's a young man who was forward-thinking enough to pack his own lunch. Good job. It's frustratingly, to me, short on backstories. Who was he? How did the disciples find him? Was he the only one out of 5,000 that brought their food? We don't know. But here's something we do know. We know that he was willing. We don't see that they, you know, held him upside down by his ankles and kind of like shook him down for what he had and took it. The boy is there with them in this moment. And so perhaps he saw that they were trying to figure out if there was any food. And he said, well, I have something. I have what's available. We know something else. We know that he wasn't super well off. John goes out of his way to note that these loaves, and he's the only gospel writer that does this, but barley loaves were the bread of a poor person. He went out of his way to let us know that even what he had wasn't very good. Not only was it short in, way too short in terms of quantity, but also quality, it wasn't that good. But it's what was available. And then in verse 11, we see that although we begin with this idea of scarcity, and here's what scarcity means, there's not enough. That's it, there's not enough. Although we begin with scarcity, we see in verse 11 that in Jesus' hands, there is no such thing as scarcity, because in Jesus' hands, our scarcity becomes his abundance. And so Jesus gives thanks, and he begins to distribute. And I love this story, because no matter what is offered, the tiniest amount or the lowest quality, whatever is given to Jesus can be multiplied to serve the purposes of Jesus. These disciples, I wish they would have seen beyond this. They had a big view of Christ. They had seen him change water into wine. They had seen him heal a man's son from a distance. They had seen him encounter a paralyzed man at the pool of Bethesda, and he healed him, and he began to walk. And so they knew something was going on, but in this moment, this situation was too much. And I believe it's simply because, well, although they've seen Jesus do other things, they hadn't seen him do this yet. They hadn't seen this yet. So that one thing, although if this situation was 5,000 people and they needed wine and all they had was water, and Jesus said, hey, here's a problem. What do you guys think we should do about it? Hopefully they all would have said, I know, teacher. Do the thing you did where you took all the water and turned it into wine. See, I was paying attention. Go for it. And they'd be proud because they knew he could do that. So there, even that is a miracle, right? But here, they had not seen him do what he does here, so it doesn't even exist in their minds. But let me tell you this, just because God hasn't done something doesn't mean he won't. And that's what I believe the disciples learn here. Just because God hasn't yet does not mean he can't, does not mean he won't, because then he goes forward and he does something that would have blown their minds, and it does. It changes. It keeps shifting. Their minds keep shifting in their understanding of who this person is. They say at the end, they say, surely this is the prophet who would come into the world. They're not yet calling him the Messiah, but they're warming up. They're realizing there's something different about Jesus. Now, I want this to be practical, and I prayed about in my prep. I said, how is this practical for us? I have never seen this type of miracle perform. Maybe you have. I have friends that have been on the mission field, and were passing out food, and it went much, much, much further than logic and reason ever should have allowed it to go. But I've never seen that experience it myself. Maybe you will this week. Maybe you won't. So how can this be practical for us? Well, I want to challenge you as I close with just three quick ideas, and I think these will apply to us. I want to challenge you in regards to your testimony, your abilities, and your finance. Your testimony, your abilities, and your finance. The common denominator of all three is simply this. The idea, and when it comes to our testimony, our abilities, and our finance, we've all thought this, the idea that what I have is insufficient. What I have is not enough. Think about your testimony. Everybody here has a testimony. It's just your story. There's no such thing as a bad testimony. You have a story. If God has done anything in your life, you have a story. There's a great story where Jesus heals a man who was born blind, and then later people come up to him and say, tell us all about him. Who was he, and what does this mean for us, and what's going to happen next? And he says, no. I don't know. Whether he's this or that, I can't tell you. What I can tell you is this. I was blind, now I see. That's a testimony. A number of weeks ago, Tony Pita shared his testimony here in July, I think. If you were here for that, it was incredible. Incredible story about the way God has gotten a hold of Tony and took him from a place where he was living in and promoting a world of darkness, and Jesus got a hold of him and has brought him to a place where he lives in and serves the kingdom of light. Maybe that's your testimony. Drugs and bad behavior and darkness, and God's brought you out of it, praise God. But maybe you're like me, who was born in a Christian home, followed a lot of the rules, didn't feel like I had a crazy story that would ever help advance the gospel at all. And for years, I felt ashamed about my testimony. And if people are sharing this or that, I just wouldn't share, because what did God save me from? I didn't drink in high school. I didn't party. I didn't experience this with drugs or this. My story doesn't mean anything. But what I've learned is that all of our stories matter. In Revelations 12:11, we're reminded that the saints will triumph over our enemy. How? Not by willpower, not by the list of good things we've done, but we triumph over our enemy by, one, the blood of the Lamb, praise God, and two, by the word of our testimony. It's your story. What has Jesus done in your life? Don't ever say, when you think about your story, your testimony, what I have isn't enough. Don't do it. Because what is insufficient in your hands and in your mind is what in Jesus' hands? More than enough. Abundantly beyond. Tell your story. Your abilities. All of us have abilities that we've been given, and all of us have a role to play. Every person who calls Fairview Church your church home. Hey, where do you go to church? I go to Fairview. Great. You have a role to play here, because there are things that God has given you to do. And guess what? You might not be able to play guitar. I can't play guitar. I'm not even allowed in John's office. He didn't let me in there. He's got way too many expensive, beautiful guitars in there. I'm not even allowed to go in there. We have to meet in my office. But I have skills that John doesn't have, and he has skills that I don't have, and you have skills that neither John or I have. And if you hold on to yours because you think they're insignificant, or because you don't preach and you don't play guitar, that somehow your skills and abilities don't matter, we are missing out as the body of Christ. And I'll say it, you're withholding that which God is trying to get you to let go of, so he can maximize it, so he can multiply it, so that he can invest it in the kingdom. And for as long as you hold that thing, Jesus doesn't rob the kid of the food, the loaves and the bread. He waits until it is given freely. Not enough quantity and of poor quality, but guess what? That's plenty for Jesus. Are you good with numbers? Are you good with numbers, math, finance? We have a finance team. We need people who are willing to say, you know what, I can do this. They don't let me in those meetings either. I can't go in John's office. I can't go to the finance meetings because I'll mess something up. Can you patch drywall? Can you figure out a plumbing issue? We have a team. Tom Tassler was here this weekend. He's cleaning toilets. I don't know if Tom's here or not. He's cleaning toilets this weekend. Not because it's his spiritual gift, but because he's willing and able to do that. Can you hold a baby? Can you cook? These are abilities that are never insignificant for the kingdom. Last, finances. I want some of that. We have a prayer team. We'll talk to you about that afterwards. Finances. I don't have enough. I can barely pay my bills. What? I'm going to give to the church? Give to and through the church? I'm not doing that. Maybe I'll give a little bit here. Maybe for the tax benefit, which doesn't really exist anymore. Giving to and through our church is not about coercion or peer pressure, obligation. It's about an exercise in trusting Christ and his ability to transform our limited resources into unlimited blessing for the sake of others and for ourselves. So remember, the boy gives up his food, but it says that everyone ate and was full. That includes the boy, right? Now, he could have eaten his poor person's bread and these little fish. He goes out of his way to call them small fish. This is not a good lunch. This is a can of tuna and a roll or something, you know? It's not good. And yet, when Jesus transforms it, the boy experiences the blessing of that miracle. He could have hoarded it. There was no rule he had to share. But by giving it away, the entire group was blessed, as was the kid. See, what Jesus did is he took what was offered and he did a miracle. And in doing so, he did abundantly beyond all that anyone could have asked, thought, or imagined. See, Jesus didn't just meet the need, he exceeded it. He did more than you or I could have imagined. The disciples said, I know he can heal people. I know he can raise the dead. I know he can turn water into wine. I know he can do the X, Y, and Z. And then they limited what he could do. And they said, it's a problem. We don't have enough money. It's impossible. It's improbable. And then Jesus said, what do you have? What do you have, church? What's your testimony? Tell your story. What skills do you have that you don't ever bring into the church, you don't use to bless? Bring those out. Join a serving team. Finances, are you withholding because you believe you can't? This boy didn't know what was going to happen. He gave up his lunch before Jesus said, oh, and by the way, if you can give me this, you're going to eat so much better. No, he just gives his lunch to Jesus and goes, he's the prophet. Let's see what happens. And sometimes giving of our finances does that exact thing for us, that we can experience something we never could have done on our own.